Molly Nielsen, what is your favorite game?
My favorite game is The Legend of Zelda Wind Waker. Well, I first got into games because my older brother is really into gaming. And so because I was his little sister, I'd kind of just do whatever he did. So he had the first ever console we had was a Dreamcast. So I remember spending hours playing this racing game where you played as penguins. I think I must have been about 3 or something. And I can't for the life of me remember what that game was called, and it still annoys me to this day. And other than the Dreamcast, I think I've had every kind of game, but I've had Game Boys for as long as I can remember. Mm. So I remember the game that I used to play obsessively was Kirby's Dream Land, the kind of original one where Kirby was white on the label. But when I was little, I could never get past I got past the first level, and then I'd get to the second level, and I'd just die every time in the same place. But I would just play it over and over and over again. I think that says something about, like, I was a simple child or something, but it kept me entertained for hours. And also Super Mario Land. Mm. I used to play all the time, but I think I completed that. I don't know, Kirby just stumped me for some reason. Don't know what it was about it. But yeah, and then when we got a GameCube, that was when I kind of really started getting more into games. And I kind of moved, because mainly I just played on the Game Boy before that. But then when we got the GameCube, I kind of moved more onto kind of console. I absolutely loved it.
What other games besides Wind Waker were you playing at the time for the GameCube?
For the GameCube, Pikmin was one I used to play quite a lot. I remember my brother was a huge Metroid Prime fan, so he I remember I turned on the GameCube once expecting to play Pikmin and have the happy little Pikmin sound, and I was sitting there, and I was the biggest scaredy cat as a child, like anything would scare me. So I was sat there expecting Pikmin, and all of a sudden this kind of Metroid Prime, you know, the really creepy opening of all the weird kind of like biology stuff and the really creepy music starts, and I'm just sat there traumatized, expecting, like, where are the Pikmin? lots of Mario, just a lot of Nintendo. My childhood was pretty much all Nintendo.
So no PlayStation, no Xbox?
No, we got an Xbox. We got an Xbox 360, after that. But PlayStation, we recently got PS4, and that's the first ever PlayStation I've ever owned, which, it's quite strange, really. But we were very much, I was just completely submerged in Nintendo when I was a kid. And that was pretty much all my gaming world, pretty much, until I got 360.
Wow, I'm basically the anti-you. Because I was a PlayStation kid growing up, and the first time I got a non-PlayStation console was an Xbox 360 in 2006.
We are the antimatter for each other.
Basically, up until 2006, all my life was just... that's not true, because there was a Game Boy Advance somewhere in 2001. But other than that, it was just PlayStation 1, PlayStation 2, PSP, and then Xbox 360. And that was kind of it from where it went from there. Although, to be fair, the only game I had for the GBA was Mario Kart. Mm. I can't remember the subtitle, but I think it was just Mario Kart Advance. And I even got a DS the day it came out, in fact, in the UK, but I never got any games for it. This is honest to God the truth. In the years I owned a DS, I never bought a single... Actually, no, that's not true. I bought Nintendogs, which was fun.
Oh, well, you know, classic game.
It is a classic game, and I even have Nintendogs plus Cats now on 3DS.
Oh, you went for the Cats. I never got that. I missed out on the Cats.
But otherwise, I just never really bought into Nintendo systems besides the handhelds up until 2000 and... I want to say 8
mm.
for Wii, because that's when I got my Wii. I had to like sell off half of my collection for Wii plus Mario Galaxy 1 and
yep.
Guitar Hero 3, I think it was, around that time. So, yeah. And there might have been a couple of other games at that time, but those are the only two that I can remember.
Yeah, I think Nintendo is one of those ones where it's very much kind of, you're either completely into it, especially if you're a kid, you know, you're kind of, it was just my whole gaming world. But, I can see like a lot of people nowadays, because they didn't have that growing up, I kind of feel like because I have that sentimentality, I kind of can forgive Nintendo for a lot of stuff, and I'll always kind of have that kind of rose-tinted view. But I can completely understand where people are coming from when they don't have that. So it's kind of like, well, it's just the same game. And although I will argue that until my death, I can completely see like where people are coming from.
Like at least now they're starting to go forward with a couple of new IPs. Like Miyamoto has a couple of projects in the works now, from what we saw at E3. Mm. And there's Splatoon as well, which is a new IP, although that was meant to have Mario as the main character at one point.
Of course.
Of course.
You know, that's the one thing that Mario hasn't done. He hasn't fired Squid at his friends. You know, he's done everything else. They've run out of sports.
Exactly.
Got to get Squid's involved.
Yeah. Oh, like, just fire inks at everything that moves. And not to mention there's Star Fox as well coming back.
Yeah, I'm happy about that.
So Star Fox was something you played back in the day as well?
Well, that was one that, well, again, like, and it's, you know, it sounds so incredibly soppy, but like everything to do with gaming, it always stems back to my brother, because my brother was the one that, you know, he bought the games and I would just kind of play them when, you know, I'd get the, when he was done, I'd play with them. And, he was a huge Star Fox fan. And so I played bits of it, but a lot of what I remember is sitting in the living room and playing on my Game Boy, but watching him play it. So that's how I got into a lot of games. I'd watch my brother play it first, and then I'd kind of tentatively pick up the controller and then have a go myself. But yeah, that was how I experienced games, really.
And you mentioned, like, obviously your Game Boy experience. Like, I assume, like, every other child in the late 90s, early noughties, Pokemon was part of that kind of pilgrimage.
Yeah, of course. Pokemon was a huge bit. I had Red or Blue. I had one of them. But, I played that a lot, but I never kind of, and I was very, cause I was a child and I was obsessed with the TV show and had the cards and, you know, pretty much like every other child of my age. But I kind of, with Pokemon games, I'll get them and I'll start them and I'll be like, oh yes, you know, it's great, it's Pokemon, but I will never finish them.
I'm the same.
It's a terrible habit, but I get so far and I'm like, I'm going to play something else now.
Yeah.
And I really should just sit down and finish one day.
Yeah, I'm the same. Like, I had either Red or Blue, I can't remember, but I definitely know I had Yellow and I had Silver and I probably invested like half a dozen hours into Yellow, but like only a couple of hours into either Red or Blue and Silver.
Mm.
And like, because I remember playing the Silver version when I was in the hospital like 12 years ago. And it was something to, you know, work away at in the middle of the night while the nurses weren't looking. It's kind of that thing where games can keep you going through a kind of hard time, but like Pokemon was kind of, you know, there. Even though I never finished it, and it was only a handful of hours, like having that there was kind of as close as equivalent to a comfort toy you can get than say like a stuffed toy or something.
Yeah, I mean, I had quite a similar experience. I've written a blog post about it, but I kind of I wondered how much, because I have an anxiety disorder, which was only diagnosed recently, but they think it's kind of been there for a long time, and I kind of wonder how much my love of games has been informed by that, and the need for kind of, when I was younger, I would be fine, but occasionally it would just get a bit much and I'd just need to kind of escape into that other world, which is usually, you know, on a Game Boy, on the GameCube or something. And how much, if I didn't need that escape, how much I'd be into games now. And I do wonder that sometimes. But it definitely was, it was a huge help to me. And still is now. I think it's, you know, I see, a lot of stuff in the news and they say, you know, it can And it can be unhealthy, you know, it can become more of an addiction than a kind of escape. But I think it's kind of the same with anything. I was talking to a doctor once and they were saying, oh, but, you know, you're not really tackling things with that. And I say, well, you know, it's like the thing that doctors often tell you when you have depression or anxiety or stuff, they often, for some reason, take a bath seems to be like one of the big cure-all things. Like, oh, if you ever feel stressed, take a bath and stuff. And it's like, well, with gaming, it's a bit like, you know, if I take a bath and I have a nice hour or two in a bath and it's lovely, then you wouldn't see that as unhealthy. But if I stayed in a bath for 3 days straight, didn't get out, you know, just kind of sat there wallowing in the water, it wouldn't be healthy. And it's exactly the same with games. It's all about moderation. Mm. I think, yeah, but I think they can be incredibly helpful. I know there's, you know, there's already a lot of stuff on YouTube and things people have written about that. And it, yeah, it's very interesting.
So talk about how you entered the industry then, on that side of things.
I've been in the industry about 6 months now, I think. I'm fairly new. I'm a student at the moment, but I took a year out of uni in between my first and my second year. And I ended up doing an internship at Jinx TV. So I did an internship there for about a month and they liked my writing. So I stayed on as a freelance writer and I still occasionally write scripts for them and things like that. And I did a Twitch stream for them for a little while and then, yeah, and just started a blog and been on Sky News a couple of times. And yeah, I'm just kind of going with the flow at the moment. I've kind of just almost fallen into it. I'm not sure quite how I've ended up here.
It's kind of that, oh God, I don't quite know how to describe it. It's kind of a snowball effect.
Yeah, yeah, very much so. I mean, I have a few friends in the industry, like kind of Lucy James and stuff, where if, you know, they've been a huge help and I wouldn't be here where I am now without them. And yeah, and because of people like that and, you know, people giving me a chance to write stuff about games or people reading my blog, it just kind of escalates. And it's been wonderful. I'm absolutely loving it. I'm going back to uni soon, but, I'm hoping to kind of keep on freelancing while I study. So yeah, that's the plan.
Oh, okay. Is it something you'd still like to do after uni, like in a proper full-time capacity, even as a freelancer or even in a full-time job or whatever?
I haven't ruled out not so much leaving uni, but maybe going, doing my course part-time, if I kind of really got into this. And I know I want to go into kind of media and stuff, and the experience I've got through games is, you know, incredible. But I really like the industry, and I think, you know, I'm incredibly lucky to be writing about, you know, what's pretty much like the birth of an art form. And it's very weird because it's an industry, you know, where no one's actually retired from it yet, so nobody really knows where kind of careers are going or where people end up and stuff like that. So it's kind of scary, but a very exciting industry, I think.
And it's kind of one that while it is growing, definitely, don't get me wrong, it does feel like it's kind of in limbo at the same time as well. Like it doesn't really have an identity for itself.
I think there's a big identity crisis, and it's kind of, I think it's just kind of with, you know, like I said, because it's becoming a kind of a real art form now, it's kind of having that bit kind of rocky transition between, well, you know, we can't just kind of say what's coming out and give a number on what, you know, kind of review things with a number. There's more to be said. And I think it's just kind of I think it's almost like a natural transitioning period, but it is a bit of a rocky one.
To your favorite game, The Legend of Zelda, Wind Waker. So I can probably take a guess that Wind Waker was your first foray into the series, right?
Other than the handheld, Link to the Past and stuff like that. But Wind Waker was, yeah, it's a bit of a weird one. Like I said, in my kind of interest in games, it's not very linear. Kind of, I played Wind Waker for a bit when I was kind of little and then didn't really finish it, and then I played some, so if like, I, it kind of took me a couple of years to kind of really kind of get into it. But yeah, I just absolutely love that game. As you can probably tell, I'm choosing to talk about it for an hour.
Yeah. Yeah, I can, like, I'm only getting into it myself, to be honest. Like, cause I only got, like I said, I never had a non-PlayStation console until like nearly 8 years ago. So, I only got it through the Mario Kart 8 offer. From when that came out, so I've had that basically sitting on the Wii U until recently unplayed. So I only started fairly recently, and you know, like it was only 90 odd minutes, but like I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, like, it is just, it's one of those things where it's just kind of almost just like pure fun. I think that's why I loved Nintendo as a kid, because it just felt fun, and that's, it's not all there was to it, but that was the kind of driving force behind the games. Especially as a young girl, you know, I kind of felt growing up, especially in like the 90s and kind of early noughties and stuff, you know, I wasn't the target market or the audience for most of the games that were coming out or being pitched, but Nintendo games felt like a nice kind of neutral ground where being a girl or, you know, being a young girl, it didn't matter, and I wasn't the kind of teenage boy, you know, kind of army that the rest of the industry seemed to be pitching to me, or at least that's how I felt at the time. And yeah, I think that also plays like a big part of it.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, for 1 week, it was only 90 odd months, but it wasn't like my first foray into the series as well, because like I was playing Ocarina of Time on 3DS for the first time. I was playing Twilight Princess for a while, and Skyward Sword for like 2 to 3 hours, and I really enjoyed when I played the Skyward Sword, but I couldn't finish it.
I had the same. I like what they were trying to do. They were trying to make it a bit different, and kind of the idea of the whole world is a puzzle or a dungeon, but I'm hoping that with the kind of next series, they kind of streamline it a bit and they kind of make it feel more like an actual world instead of just one big dungeon. But maybe that's just my own, you know, I'm one of these incredibly sad people where I like to just wander around the world and look at how pretty it is and stuff like that. So
from those kind of comments, I can probably suspect Skyrim is a game that you've played a great deal of as well.
Yeah, any game where there's kind of, you know, like a big massive world that I can just kind of get lost in, I'm a huge fan of. In fact, when I was I know we're going to get on to kind of runner-ups, but Oblivion is one of my all-time favorite games. I'd love, that was my first kind of foray into the kind of Bethesda Elder Scroll, and since then, yeah, I think I was thinking about it before, and I was thinking all my kind of runner-up games, there's 2 Bethesda and 2 BioWare. I'm so boring and mundane. Everyone's going to think these games. I need to come up with something really obscure and niche. I was trying to remember that Dreamcast Penguin Racing game, and I was like, I bet no one else would say that. And I couldn't for the life of me find it. Maybe I imagined it, I don't know, but...
For what it's worth, no one has mentioned that yet.
Well, good. At least I've got their... I mean, I don't know their name or anything about it, but that's a niche that I've got.
But going back to Zelda, and kind of my... like, going the back and forth, and from my experiences, like, obviously there was the few hours with Skyward. There was a few hours I spent with Twilight Princess, and I just, like, I really... Well, it wasn't that so much that I didn't like Twilight, it was just... It kind of bored me at the same time.
I think, Twilight Princess, I'm a bit, as a huge Zelda fan as I am, I'm kind of a bit of a, I don't know, I kind of feel like I say stuff that other Zelda fans would kind of, you know, cringe away at and go, my God, what she's saying. But, you know, I kind of think a bit like Ocarina of Time is a little bit overrated, and, I know, I've put that out there in the world now, I can't take that back. obviously it's an incredible game, and it was a complete game changer and stuff like that, but I do think, you know, it's not, when you go back, it does have some pacing issues, and it, you know, there are parts of it which are not as well designed as, obviously because it's an earlier title, it's not going to be as streamlined as the later ones are, but I've put that out there now, I can't take that back. I'm going to have angry Zelda fans knocking at my door.
And, like, to be fair, like, I can play Ocarina, or I can finish Ocarina of Time, not because it wasn't a bad game by any stretch. Like, it was, like, on 3DS, and I was like, I really enjoyed it while I was playing it, but up until I found spiders, and I was like, nope, fuck that, bye, spiders, nope, I'm done, because, like, I have a metric in games, if your game has a spider, I'm done.
Wow, you may struggle with the Zelda series then. I think there's a fair few spiders that may crop up.
To be fair, there's only one game that I've kind of broken the, let's say, spider pain barrier for, and that's Uncharted 3.
I'm the same with kind of games, and like I said, I'm a massive wimp. Games are kind of like the dark. I hate the dark. And even in like games, it freaks the fuck out of me. Like, I can't play horror games. I'm terrible. I remember the PT demo that came out recently. I kind of sat down. I was like, no, I'm going to play this. You know, I feel like it's something I should experience. So I sat down and I held the controller and I literally played it for about 10 seconds. And then I called my brother and I was like, okay, what we're going to do here is you're going to play it and I'll watch you play it and that will count. That's fine. I would technically, and I ruined the experience for him because he spent the whole time laughing at me, kind of just like screaming and cowering and covering my eyes. So he was there just pissing himself laughing while I was absolutely terrified. Yeah, I feel like I kind of ruined that experience for him a bit.
Oh dear. I mean, like, to be fair, like, I've only played like very few horror games myself, like Resident Evil 4, 5, 6. What else have I played in terms of horror? Oh, Silent Hill 3. And although this isn't a horror game as such, because I know for a fact the Remedy really does not like having it being called as a horror game, more of a thriller. Alan Wake.
Yeah,
because like that was a game that was heavily kind of skewed on the battle between light and dark. And yeah, sorry, go on.
I remember when you mentioned Resident Evil 4, I mean, that's like such a good game, like amazing game. But I remember when I first played it, because my brother played it and I watched him play it and I was like, right, okay, no, I'm going to play this game. I know what happens. It can't scare me. And I got to the bit, like right at the beginning when you're in the village and you, I can't remember the name of the Spanish guy. I can't remember his name, but yeah, the Spanish guy that you kind of is your guy that turns, pops up a bit, you know, your friend in it.
Yeah.
And there's a bit where the wardrobe is shaking and it turns out it's him inside tied up, but you have to go up and open the door and stuff. And like, I knew it was him inside the wardrobe. I'd seen it all before, but I couldn't bring myself to open this wardrobe. I was like, what happens if it's different this time? What happens? You never know. I could never stream any kind of, you know, I could never put on Twitch or any kind of me playing a horror game, because I think I would just lose all credibility and dignity very quickly.
Oh dear. Well, to be fair, it could have been a lot worse. It could be a lot worse, even.
Oh, but yeah, we were talking about Twilight Princess. I remember you saying, I have a kind of weird relationship. Twilight Princess is my second favourite Zelda game. And a lot of, that's a kind of a bit of kind of, ooh, really? That, I don't know, I think, I feel so sorry for it. I feel like such an underrated game. And it does have one of the slowest starts to any game ever. It is very slow to begin with, so I don't blame you for not liking it in the first hour or hour and a half or whatever it is. But I loved the art style of it, and I thought the story was great. It was a bit dark, and I think the dungeon design in Twilight Princess is some of the best in any Zelda series. I think it does struggle a bit because it is quite easy. The bosses are very easy. You can go for the whole game and not die once very easily. But yeah, I love that game. It is one that I will defend. I will defend in the Zelda series. I'm a big fan.
Going back then to Wind Waker, talk about the aspects that you liked about the game. Obviously, like, even for me in my short time playing it, the first thing that I just love the best is the art style.
Yeah, the art style is just, it's not only really gorgeous to look at, but it's very clever with what they did in terms of they didn't have the kind of hardware power to produce that amount of water in a kind of trying to go for a realistic style. The fact they went for a kind of like cell shaded, I think it's I think it's very clever of them, because it kind of, it means that they can, you know, the GameCube at the time could sustain this kind of big world. But it didn't, do you know what I mean? It kind of, it was a very clever choice, as well as being a great art style. It was very clever for the hardware that they had at the time.
Yeah, kind of a design choice for it.
Yeah. But yeah, it's just absolutely gorgeous. I mean, and of course, Sam, you're playing the HD remake, which I've just finished. I've just played the HD one. But even when you go back and play the original, because of the art style, it just has endured very well. Mm. It still looks gorgeous. And the thing I find as well, the art style, it's so expressive.
Oh yeah.
And it's so kind of, I feel like of all Zelda titles, it's the one which has the most personality and the most character. Like, you know, the kind of like, at the beginning when your grandma gives you the hero's clothes, and when Link holds them up, he has this kind of like, look in his face, and just little things like that. And I think it just, out of all the series, it's the most expressive, and it's the most, yeah. And I think, one of the reasons I also really liked it is, again, I'm going to go all horrible and sentimental and mushy on you. but I really like the kind of, it's one of the few Zelda games where Link actually has a family. I mean, he often has a kind of an uncle or maybe a granddad or something like that. But, you know, he has his sister and he has his grandma. And I think also, because when my brother was playing it, I looked like Aral. I was the small blonde child of pigtails. And, like, I think kind of... yeah, and I think it was Wind Waker was something that me and my brother kind of bonded over, and also having that kind of brother sister relationship in it, is really sweet. I think it works really well, and also from a, you know, not just as kind of a gameplay, but also in a, you know, as I said, a horrible, sentimental, mushy way of my own experiences playing the game.
I was just going to say, how Polygon article the other day. About, I think it was Alexa Ray Correa, who was writing about how she bonded, her and her brothers kind of bonded through Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah.
And I'm normally a sucker for any kind of article like that, but like, reading that, it just kind of, that kind of bond, like I never really had that, I mean, as such, the, in terms of, you know, multiple family members bonding over a game. Like, the only kind of experience I had as such with that was playing Sega games with my brother every odd Saturday when I was a kid, like 5 or 6 years old. So that was a kind of a lovely experience.
Yeah. I think we bonded also because when I was growing up, I didn't have any friends who were into gaming. And, well, it wasn't until I kind of came into the industry like 6 months ago that I had any friends that are into gaming. Like, none of my friends are gamers or anything like that. So the only person that I knew that was my brother. So yeah, I think because he was, apart from when the Wii came along and then Mario Kart and stuff like that, then everyone all of a sudden had a Wii, which was brilliant. All of a sudden I wasn't the sole, gamer of my friends, but, I mean, my friends always take the piss out of me, but they always said I was a secret nerd or a secret gamer. Cause I just, yeah, I don't know, none of my friends are into it, at all, really. And I think that's also one thing that, so me and my brother bonded over it, but also, this is going to sound incredibly horrible, out of almost like, not just kind of sentimentality, but also almost like necessity. I had no one else to play with. It just sounds horrible, which I'm sure isn't the only reason. But yeah, I think that does kind of play a part in it. And even to this day, like when something gaming related happens or something, you know, something in my career or something like that, I will always go to my brother first, just because he's the only one that I've ever really talked to about video game stuff. And it's still, like, just habit. Like, something will happen, I'll just be like, Joe, I need your advice.
So, moving forward then, like, we talked about the aspects that you liked about the game. Mm. Like, what about the aspects that you hated about the game?
Well, there's kind of, again, I kind of touched upon this in my blog, and it's, I kind of feel Wind Waker has, for me, the kind of my favorite kind of reincarnation, if you will, of Zelda or Ganondorf. I think the kind of Ganondorf with the dual swords and the kind of Japanese type robe is really cool, and just that, I think that's like the best. For me, that's my favorite one. And again, like I love Tetra as a character, and there's going to be spoilers here.
Yeah, you're fine.
but obviously Tetra turns out to be Princess Zelda, and I love Tetra as a character. I mean, when I was a girl, it was so liberating to kind of have this kind of young female character that was kind of didn't take any shit and was head of a group of pirates and stuff like that, and I just loved that. And my least favorite part is my least favorite bit of the game is when it is revealed that Tetra is Princess Zelda. She kind of goes this transformation, and all of a sudden she's, you know, wearing the classic pink dress, and her hair's all fancy, and she has a bit of makeup on. And I kind of thought at the time I was the girliest of girls when I was growing up. Like, if there was anything pink or sparkly or anything like that, then I just fucking loved it. So when Tetra kind of turned and all of a sudden she had this pink dress, I was like, oh my God, she's just gotten even cooler. It's like, for me, that was like awesome. For me, I just thought that was awesome. But then kind of all of a sudden she loses all her personality as soon as she turned into Princess Zelda. I mean, she turns into Princess Zelda, and then the King of Hyrule, or the King of Red Lions, goes, oh, well, for me, it is my wish that you stay here. It is too dangerous for you to go out now. Something along those lines. And I remember thinking at the time, I was like, what? I was like, she's a badass pirate. She's just been doing all this shit. How come all of a sudden, just because she's wearing a pink dress, she, you know, can't go out and do what she was doing? And I kind of expected, oh, well, maybe she'll kind of be like, no, you know, no way, old man, kind of thing. But she doesn't. She just kind of goes, oh, well, I'll see you later, Link, whatever. And I was just a bit like, what? Like, that doesn't work. Like, even just her character would at least kind of fight it a little bit, you know, at least kind of question it a bit. And I just found that really disheartening. And I mean, later on when you're doing the boss fight, she gets kidnapped, of course, because she's Princess Zelda, and that is her role. She gets kidnapped, and you have to go rescue her and stuff. And in the final boss fight, she does kind of help out, and she fires arrows and stuff like that. And I just kind of felt, and she does kind of get her personality back a bit, and she turns back into Tetra by the end of the game. I just kind of felt by that point the damage had been done a bit, and it was almost like they came so close to kind of doing something a bit different, and I was just absolutely loving this character, and then they had to turn around and do the typical kind of, oh, well, now that you're wearing a pink dress and you're Princess Zelda, you should probably stay here. It's a bit dangerous. And even when I played it recently, I was playing the HD one on the gamepad, and I just kind of got to that bit, and I was just like, oh, man, I hate this bit so much.
Such bullshit.
Yeah, and, yeah, I just think back to kind of, you know, like, little me kind of just getting, you know, sitting there in my pink dress with, you know, pink clips and, you know, fluffy stuff and sparkles, and just sitting there, I was thinking, why, just because she's wearing this pink dress and she's a princess, does she have to be, you know, have some kind of personality lobotomy all of a sudden? Just, and it just, yeah, and that's the main thing about the game that gets me to this day. But even still, I think it's one of the better reincarnations of Princess Zelda in the series. You know, at least for half the game or three quarters of the game, at least she's still a badass pirate.
Yes, to a degree, like, there's that kind of character that who finds herself, you know, having this kind of... I'm kind of struggling to use this word, if it's the right term, but to find her own independence.
Yeah, yeah. No, definitely. I mean, because when you start the game, Tetra's, you know, she's completely independent, and she kind of helps you a bit, and she's kind of cheeky and sassy and all that kind of stuff. And obviously, like, I just absolutely lapped that up as a little girl. I thought that was brilliant. And then to kind of have that kind of taken away, just when you think, you know, it's in a game, especially when I was younger, you know, you didn't really get that character very often. And if you did get that character, it would often be in kind of forms of like Samus and stuff where their gender wasn't part of their character, if you know what I mean. They could be male or female. There's nothing wrong with that. I think, you know, kind of a strong female character that gender isn't a major part is a thing that needs to happen, is a good thing. But there was definitely a lack of kind of all the strong female characters that, again, yeah, they were like Samus or they were like Jade from Beyond Good and Evil, and they're all brilliant characters. But they weren't, this is again, it's gonna sound awful, but when I was little, they weren't girly. And I didn't mean they should be. You need diversity and stuff. But when I was younger, all the characters that were kind of girly or kind of, you know, like the same things as me, they were all kind of, and they were either like Ashley from Resident Evil 4, you know, they were annoying or they were useless or they were bratty, you know, they were like
Rose from Metal Gear Solid 2.
Exactly. They were all kind of, they were either kind of useless or annoying, you know, and it was kind of, and to the point where I think now looking back, I went from being incredibly girly to being a massive tomboy. And it was a conscious decision because every kind of girly character I saw in games or even on TV, they were the annoying ones. And I was like, well, I don't want to be that. And looking back, that's really unfair. You know, I shouldn't have had to have, you know, changed my identity because, you know, video games and because cartoons are telling me that, you know, pink and bows and sparkles were annoying.
Yeah, and I was going to say as well, like that kind of Samus reveal at the end of Metroid, like it kind of had that "It's me, Austin" type reveal. Like,
yeah.
Like, by the way, if that reference goes over anyone's head, go check out the Authority reveal on YouTube. You'll get it. But no, that kind of reveal, like, of Samus at the end of Metroid, the first Metroid, like it was like, holy crap! I was playing as a female character all along rather than, you know, a male character. Cause, like, if you think about it, like, at least from the surface, when you're first starting playing out Metroid, although admittedly this is coming from someone who's never played Metroid, so I'm just basically saying this as a kind of, rambling thought. Like, when you're first playing Metroid, like, you think Samus Aran, that's kind of a boy's name, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that's a brilliant thing, and I'm not saying kind of, you know, every female character should be really girly. That's, of course, not, you know, not what I'm saying. And, you know, and it's, and there was obviously, you know, the kind of, you know, it's brilliant that female character design has got past the kind of stage of she is female, therefore she shall wear pink and she shall have a flower in her hair. And that is how she is female. You know, it's brilliant that we've got past that, but in a kind of way, it's almost that, a character that is kind of into those kind of things, it automatically becomes a kind of negative quality, if you know what I mean. I remember that's one of my runner-up games is Dragon Age Origins. I absolutely adored that game. And one of the reasons why I love it so much is the characters in it. I think it's got some of the best characters in any game. And one of the characters is Liliana, who is a kind of female ex assassin-y type person who's now a nun essentially, and she and I just thought she was so well written because she was kind of, she'd talk about how she liked fashion and shoes and she was, you know, missed all that stuff, but it wasn't a detriment to her, it was just part of who she was, and it wasn't the defining part of her character, but it also wasn't a negative quality, you know, it didn't stop her still, you know, going out and shooting bad guys in the face of arrows. I remember playing that game and seeing that character and kind of thinking, God, this is a really underused character. This is, this is incredibly rare in a way.
But kind of going back to Zelda, I think I'm trying to think of the right term here, but like what makes her so beloved is the potential is there for her to, you know, be this kind of badass character at the same time, if you get what I mean. Because, like, obviously there was the trailer for E3 this year that announced the Wii U Zelda. I can honestly attest this, like, me and Mike Biffle, who, like, we were doing a stream on Twitch on E3, and we were kind of guessing amongst ourselves, that's Zelda, not a Link. And
yeah, it's difficult. It's weird, isn't it? I think they have gone out to say now that it is linked, but
oh yeah, yeah, they have. Like,
but yeah, just the fact that people could speculate that is saying quite a lot. And also, I think there's, yeah, I mean, oh god, when that I remember I was on holiday for most of E3, and I streamed the Nintendo live stream treehouse thing, much to the annoyance of the person I was on holiday with. But yeah, and I was just waiting for the Zelda release, and oh god, I could talk for a long time just about that trailer alone. I think it just has got me. I remember the year when it was 2 years before Skyward Sword was released. The only thing they announced about it was a piece of artwork.
Yeah.
And that was it. And that was, and even still, I was ridiculously excited about that. Like, and I just love the kind of, it's such a beloved series and people know it so well, but yet, you know, just the tiniest details make such a difference. So people are speculating like, oh, you know, that character looks a bit like the Master Sword. Maybe it means this, maybe it means that. And again, with the kind of the latest E3 trailer, they're like, oh, it, you know, it looks slightly more feminine. Why have they got such a powered up weapon when they haven't got the hero costume? Maybe it's, you know, this or that. And I love that. I think, you know, I think that's a sign of just a brilliant series and the fact that people love it so much. And although, you know, the very basic formula hasn't been changed that much, but these details make such a difference to the games, and people can debate that for hours. And I just think it's lovely. It's such a kind of a friendly discussion, which is something which is lacking sometimes in the gaming industry. It's something that feels, when people were discussing it and discussing Zelda and stuff, it feels just so kind of sincere, and you know, it's just people loving this game. And it's just really nice every now and again to have that.
Yeah, I mean, I was quite disappointed to hear afterwards that EJA and Numa debunked it actually did turn out to be Link than Zelda.
Yeah.
I'm like, don't get me wrong, like, Link's awesome, but like, I really, really would love to see Zelda come and playable as a Zelda game.
I was kind of hoping it would be, maybe if it wasn't Zelda, maybe like a twin sister or something, or something like that. And but yeah, I mean, yeah, that is obviously a little disappointing. But I'm still ridiculously excited.
Yeah, even part playable, kind of like how like what happened with The Last of Us. Even I could love that. I could honestly love that. Just kind of tread on the waters, so to speak.
Yeah. I think also it's quite interesting with the gamepad. They have, you know, they have a real chance to kind of make a really interesting kind of local multiplayer Zelda title. You know, they've really pushed the, I remember originally when the gamepad came out, most of it was about, you know, the person who had the gamepad would be a bit like an Evolve type thing. There would be a kind of one strong character, then there'd be kind of four or three.
Yeah.
This, and I just, they could do something really interesting with that, of a Zelda title. But, yeah, who knows?
And not to mention, I think it was Aonuma who said recently, like, it's going to be, well, it's not going to be open world in the sense you think it is. So when he says that, he probably means it's worth thinking of the game as it is in terms of Skyrim or Oblivion or Bethesda RPG, basically.
And when they were talking about how the focus on open world, and kind of they showed that amazing kind of panning shot of Hyrule Field or whatever it'll be, and I just, oh god, that's, it's like my two favourite things just coming together, so I have high hopes.
So, before we move on to honourable mentions, rank your top three Zelda games. I obviously Wind Waker would be top, but what about the other two?
My top three Zelda games, Wind Waker's top, and then, I mean, it's a difficult one because there are different things you can rank it on. If I'm going just purely on kind of personal enjoyment or kind of personal, my personal top three would probably be Wind Waker, Twilight Princess, and then, oh man, that's a difficult one. That's a really difficult one. There are lots, I love them all for different reasons. That I think Majora's Mask is wonderfully dark and twisted, but also I found some of the mechanics really annoying. Difficult one. The recent Link Between Worlds on the 3DS.
Yeah.
I've played that and I absolutely loved that game. I just thought it's a really difficult game. It was really refreshing to have a Zelda game that you're kind of sitting there and just kind of screaming at your 3DS about. You know, it was, but yeah, I think I'll throw that in there as a kind of a hand hot, you know, kind of, I love Link to the Past, but now when I think back to it, I think Link Between Worlds is the better game. So yeah, I'm going to put that to mix it up a bit. I'm going to go crazy.
So let's move on to your honourable mentions then.
Yes.
You already mentioned one, but let's talk about that honourable mention then, Dragon Age Origins.
Yeah, Dragon Age Origins. Yeah, well, I've probably easy if I've got 4 honourable mentions. Yeah, and as I said, it's 2 BioWare and 2 Bethesda because I'm a very uncreative person.
You're fine because like I had someone else basically come in the other day and basically give me 7. So you're fine with 4. Better than fine.
Okay, that's okay then. It was quite a struggle to whittle them down, but okay, so it's the 2 Bethesda ones are Oblivion and then Fallout 3 and then the BioWare Mass Effect 2 and Dragon Age Origins. Those are my 4 honourable mentions.
Can you go into specifics as to why you love them?
Yeah. Well, I think chronologically, the first one out of the 4 that I got into was Oblivion. It was kind of, as I said, after I had the GameCube, we got a 360, and that was my first kind of moving away from Nintendo. And I think Oblivion was a game that really kind of just heavily got me into the 360. I was a bit young when Morrowind first came out, so I didn't really have that kind of, I can see why people would prefer Morrowind looking back because it doesn't, it's kind of a bit more demanding and it's a bit trickier, I don't know, but I think personally just because I have that kind of Oblivion was the first one I went into, it kind of, for me, it has that kind of magic to it. And When I first played that game and it just absolutely blew my mind that on this disc they could fit this huge world and there was all these people that you could talk to and villages and towns and it just, I spent almost 200 hours.
What? 200
of, yeah.
Although to be fair, this is rich coming from me because I think I spent like something like 180 hours on GTA 4. So.
Yeah, so, I'm just going to stick with 200 hours, because if I kind of speculate too much, it'll end up being more, and I'll sound incredibly strange. But, yeah, I spent so long on that game, and I thought, I kind of feel like, as much as I love Skyrim, and again, I've put in silly amounts of time into that game, but I feel kind of Skyrim, it's better in Oblivion in every sense apart from in the quest design. I feel Oblivion is more creative in its kind of quest design. I also feel like Skyrim is kind of, it's a bit po-faced, it's a bit kind of serious, and it kind of misses that kind of slightly weird twinkle that Oblivion had and kind of the Fallout series has.
Oh yeah. Definitely.
And yeah, like Oblivion just kind of, I think the Shivering Isles expansion is like worth a mention just on its own. I think that's the best DLC ever for any game. I think it's just fantastic. It's just so weird and so out there. And yeah, I think Oblivion just has a kind of a weirdness to it that Skyrim missed a bit. And I also, Skyrim made sense of the world in the fact that it was a kind of Nordic world, so everything was kind of, you know, it was all forests or it was tundra and stuff, but I kind of felt by the end of it, I was like, oh god, I'm so sick of snow. I hate snow. I never want to see it again. And Oblivion, it kind of feels a bit more like a cop-out, but because it was kind of, you know, the main center of the world, there was kind of bits of everything in there, so you had the kind of mountainous stuff, but you also had kind of the forest, and then you had kind of fields, and you had more towns and stuff like that. And it just, even though it's, I think the map is the same size, but Skyrim has technically more because it's more mountainous. Oblivion just felt bigger to me, and it still does in a weird way. I don't know. It feels like there's more to it in a way. I can see that Skyrim is better designed, and it's, you know, there's more thought put into it. It's less random, but there's just something about the world of Oblivion. And in Oblivion, you can go through the same cave system a million times, and it will always feel new. And I don't know quite how they've done that. I think it's a real credit to Bethesda that I can go back and play that game now, and I know I'm playing the same cave system that I have, you know, 100 times before, but I'm still completely hooked by it. Mm. And yeah, I think that was the game that kind of dragged me kicking and screaming out of Nintendo. Fallout 3 is my other Bethesda choice.
Yeah, I had this kind of feeling recently to go back and play Fallout 3.
Yeah, I'm going, but I recently I'm kind of getting more into PC gaming now, and just, you know, I first got into it purely because I could go back and I could play Oblivion and Fallout, and I could just mod the shit out of it and just make it look how I wanted it to look when I first played it. And yeah, I'm absolutely loving it. But yeah, Fallout 3, I kind of think like the world and the kind of story and the kind of, and actually I really, really like New Vegas. I knew New Vegas gets quite a lot of shit, but I kind of think New Vegas was, obviously there was like mechanical issues of it and stuff like that, but it was just so kind of weird and wacky and kind of, and Fallout, I love the Fallout universe, and it's kind of something that, it's kind of a weird one because, as a history student, my main bit of study is America. And I kind of do social and cultural history, and I like to focus on North America. And so I found kind of the really kind of twisted kind of Americana of Fallout really appealing. I just thought it was really interesting. Yeah. And kind of taking kind of, you know, the kind of extremes of what we think 1950s America to be and just kind of turning it into just this kind of nightmare. But kind of also this, I just thought it was really well done. And also in a kind of, this is something I've completely forgot to mention, but I'm a huge sucker for kind of good music in games. Mm. So one of the reasons Wind Waker is one of my favorite games of all time is because I think the music is just incredible. I love the music in Wind Waker, and the same for all the Zelda series. But again, yeah, the music in Fallout 3, the kind of, the choice of music, I'm a big kind of jazz and blues fan, and I have the music taste of a kind of a 70-year-old woman. That's how I would describe myself. And there are kind of bits, you know, kind of in the fall. Oh god, just the music choices for Fallout, they're so incredibly well chosen and so atmospheric. It just the atmosphere that Bethesda has managed to create in those games is incredible. I just think the kind of slightly twisted robots, and it's so incredibly dark. Like there's some bits of it that are just so dark, but it doesn't shy away from that. I think kind of post-apocalyptic is sometimes not a cop out, but I think it can be used as a kind of, okay, here's the world, it's bad now, you know, the gist. But it kind of, I think Bethesda in the Fallout series has really kind of fleshed out this world. And kind of informed it with parts of our own kind of social, cultural identity of today and kind of put it in there so that there's enough of it that you recognize with all the Americana stuff and things like that. And then just kind of really ran with that and worked with it. And I respect it so much in terms of kind of atmosphere building and story and things like that. Sorry, I could ramble on for a long time. I will bore you senseless.
Like one question though. Mm-hmm. Megaton, spare or blow?
Spare.
Ah.
I spared it because, I always play as a woman in these things, and I went for the Black Widow thing. Yeah. So if you go for the Black Widow thing, you can basically flirt your way out of it with the guy, which, Which I always found, I always did that because then I always found it really funny because he sends you like love letters throughout the game. And I just thought that was a really nice touch. I just found that really kind of like well thought out. I don't know, just little things like that I just really appreciate in a game.
Like in the past couple of times, like I've played Fallout 3, I've either, you know, blown it up or spared it. But like I remember vividly the first time I was playing it, I just this like, blow the sucker up. Boom. I'm such a horrible, horrible person.
Says a lot about you.
Yeah. So, moving on. Other honourable mentions, BioWare.
Yes, BioWare games. So, obviously, Mass Effect, and my favourite Mass Effect of the three is Mass Effect 2, just because, obviously, the actual, like, fighting and stuff is... 3 is the best one for actual in terms of, like, gameplay, if you get what I mean.
Yeah,
definitely. The combat system is best in 3, but I adore the characters in 2. And I like the kind of, I like the kind of waiting feeling that 2 has about it. I like the fact that it's all kind of like, it's not like you're just kind of bombastically rushing into battle constantly and stuff like that. You're kind of, there's kind of a kind of real tension and a kind of, and it, that kind of lets you get to know the characters better. And I just think, you know, the characters in Mass Effect 2 are just, as you said before, like with, Mass Effect series are just so good. I remember, one of my favorite characters is Thane. I just adore that character. I have a little, so sad I am. I have a little Thane action figure, which is my pride and joy. And just, I think it pretty much just boils down to, I think I have a bit of a crush on him. Mm. And as a, you know, as far as kind of frog lizard men go, you know, he's got a very sexy voice. And yeah, and I just think there's just loads of, like Morden again is just a fantastic character, and just the joy in that game is just talking to these characters.
Oh yeah.
And I think that's just, oh, it's just such a testament to the kind of the writing and the voice acting.
Yeah.
It's, and that's what makes the game, as much as, the lore of Mass Effect is, you know, it's very interesting and stuff, but the real reason I play it is for the characters. Yeah. That's the reason I go back to it. I think that's the reason most people go back to it, is because you want to see those characters again, or you want to play Shepard slightly differently and see how the characters react. Yeah. And I think that's amazing.
Yeah, like, yeah, just as I was saying for, Citadel, like, if at the end of the day, the entire series, like for most players, it's all about the characters, the party, and as well as that, and how well written they are and how well the act they are. So I think, despite what happened with Mass Effect 3's ending, its legacy will always be those characters and how great they fleshed out they were.
I thought it was brilliant. I thought, obviously the character interactions is amazing. Again, I'll try not to talk too long about the ending, but I felt the kind of, I feel kind of Mass Effect 2 is the pinnacle of the writing of the Mass Effect series. I feel that's where it's just at its absolute best. And then also almost Mass Effect 3, there was, obviously the ending was, the most noticeable issue, but there was other like little things. I mean, obviously, cause, a big, you know, Thane fan that I am, the way he dies is a little bit ridiculous. He runs into a man with a sword when he has a gun, which just, I remember watching that and I was just like, are you kidding me? Like seriously, this is how he's going to die. And then, although he does have a really touching kind of death scene, I just little bits like that, it just kind of felt like, no, BioWare, you were doing so well up until now.
Even more so when you consider how heroic Morden's death was.
Yeah, wow. Exactly. Morden's death was brilliant. And then I remember one of the things that when I was playing the game, after this happened, I had to like stop the game and just like go away for a little bit. Cause it was after Thane's death, and it's really sad. And my character romanced Thane. So it was like, you know, heartbreaking times. And then, so like you go back into the Normandy, and I think it's Garrus is looking at, you know, there's that kind of, monument with all the people that have died, their names appear on the monument.
Yeah.
And so like, Garrus was standing there and I was like, okay, here we go. I'm going to get a little cutscene about, oh, Shepard, I'm so sorry. blah, blah, blah. And I went over, and he just kind of looked at me and goes, you know, at times like this, I really miss Ashley. And I was like, seriously? Seriously? You're doing this now? I was like, she died, like, what, 2 games ago, Garrus. Let it go. And, you know, and Shepherd's boyfriend has just died and stuff. And then I had to, oh, God. I got to that point, and I was just like, no, okay, no. I need a moment here.
to Bioware's credit, they really can make us care about their characters, like I said.
Exactly. The fact that I could even have that reaction about a character is, yeah. But that still pisses me off. I think that, oh, at times like this, I miss Ashley. I was like, fuck Ashley! She died 2 games ago! I chose her to die!
Oh, dear. Oh, boy. So, moving quickly along, Dragon Age.
Yes, Dragon Age Origins it's a difficult, I don't think I could choose between Mass Effect 2 and Dragon Age Origins, but for very different reasons. Well, actually, fairly similar reasons, but they're just, so Mass Effect 2 just feels like it's just polished beyond belief, like it's just the shining example of a game. Mm. And Dragon Age Origins, when I first played it, it has, obviously, because BioWare working on Mass Effect, so it doesn't have the same, it doesn't have the same polish that Mass Effect does, you know, the environments and some of the graphics and textures and stuff are a bit dodgy and, you know, and stuff like that again, but I absolutely adored that game. I think it just had a charm about it that is just, I've played that game so many times now, and it's something I really like, the silent protagonist in it. Mm. I think, and it's difficult because Dragon Age 2 came out, which, it was okay, but it wasn't that great, personally. And I kind of almost missed the silent protagonist, because at least for the silent protagonist, it's almost like, it's, you're inputting what you think that character would be, almost entirely, apart from the fact you choose dialogue, but the way that character is reading that dialogue, the way that character is all in your imagination, because it's a silent protagonist. You know, that character is, you know, it's fleshed out by your own imagination. Mm. And I really liked that. And I thought it meant that, you know, I've played it through with almost every beginning now, even though my favorite, and I struggle not to go back to my favorite kind of playthrough is as the city elf rogue. That's my default Dragon Age Origins character. And, but I think, I absolutely adored the characters in Dragon Age Origins. I thought they just felt incredibly real. And there was a lot of characters in there, like I've already mentioned Liliana and stuff like that, that you don't often get to see in games. Like they had Wynn as well, who's an older woman. And then
there's Morrigan as well, of course.
Yeah, and there's kind of, yeah, there's like Wynn, you know, she was kind of an old woman who's, you know, she doesn't shy from being maternal, but she's also, you know, quite, she was a really interesting character. And then there was, of course, like Morrigan and stuff, who had a really interesting backstory. And then Alistair as well, who I think is one of my favorite game characters. He felt like, just felt really real. It was nice to see a kind of a male character that wasn't kind of, didn't want what was, you know, he was, you know, he could, again, spoilers, he could potentially be king, but he doesn't want that in a way. Like he's kind of, you know, he's kind of in a situation and he's not comfortable with his fate, as it were. And it's just really refreshing. And also I think the way that, the way your character can influence and the way those relationships play out in the actual gameplay is really interesting. I know BioWare sometimes gets a lot of flack for its kind of romance system, and which personally I think is really good. I think obviously there are some parts of it in Mass Effect with the whole, you know, just gratuitous sex scenes pretty much. But, you know, there's some parts of it where it's genuinely about building an emotional relationship and you get attached to these characters. And in Dragon Age Origins, the choosing the characters that you romance has a huge impact on the actual way the story pans out. I mean, again, spoilers, there are certain characters, if you romance, it can mean the difference between your character dying or your character living at the end of the game. And, you know, it's not an obvious choice of if you romance this person, your character will live. It's kind of, it feels incredibly natural. And it kind of, it was really nice having this kind of, these kind of romances, which were more than just kind of sex scenes. They actually played into the story, if you know what I mean.
Mm.
And they kind of really meant something in the outcome. And also, the characters were just, yeah, I think they're brilliant. Again, it's the kind of BioWare's kind of character writing and creation is just, yeah, it's something spectacular.
If I had to push you to rank your top five, how would you go? I mean, like, obviously one wicker would be top, but how would you rank the rest?
Ooh, that's a difficult one. It's difficult, because, I mean, there are games I've left out, like kind of BioShock and stuff like that, which I'm hugely, hugely fond of. Probably Wind Waker, and then Mass Effect 2, and then Oblivion, then... Oh, I don't know. I can't choose. I was like already in my head. I was questioning. I was like, no, I can't put Fallout last. Yeah, I couldn't. And also, like when I rank them like that, I'm very aware that they're all quite similar games. So I feel like BioShock and Okami and games that should be on my honorable mentions list, but it would push the podcast into kind of the 3-hour mark, and I feel we would be responsible for the deaths of people going into comas if I speak about it for that long. But I couldn't possibly choose. There'd be other games in there, like I said, like BioShock and Okami and stuff like that. I'm sorry, that's not an answer. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Holly and... Wait. Oh, my God. I've never had to say it before. It usually just kind of appears somewhere. I just had a sudden... Okay, no. Okay, I remembered it now. Okay. This is so... I'm so professional. Okay. It's at Nielsen_Holly, and Nielsen is spelled Nielsen. It is the Danish spelling of Nielsen, which always throws people completely. And then I have a blog, which is nielsenholly.wordpress.com. And yeah, and you may see me occasionally popping up on Sky or on Jinx, and yeah, just, yeah, that's, I think that's all I've got to hawk. So is that okay?
Thanks for listening to My Favorite Game. Next week, Alex Donaldson on Final Fantasy IX. Till next week, bye-bye.